Hello and welcome to Fidelity Connects, the Fidelity Investments Canada podcast. Proudly ranked the number one podcast by Canadian financial advisors in the 2021 Environix Advisor Digital Experience Study. Portfolio manager Will Danoff joins the show today. For Canadian investors, Will manages Fidelity Insights Class and also co-manages Fidelity Global Growth and Value Class with Joel Tillinghast. U.S. investors know Will as manager of Fidelity Contra Fund since 1990. Today, Will reflects on the current positioning of Insights Class, which remains having a focus on technology names. Insights aims to invest in best-of-breed firms, which Will believes will offer sustained above-average earnings growth. Today, with host Pamela Ritchie, Will discusses how the market is up significantly off the March 2020 bottom, and corporate earnings are quite high. Will notes the market right now is not cheap, but is not necessarily expensive. He shares that in speaking with companies' management and CEOs, he is seeing a lot of innovation playing out, and that there is a remarkable amount of entrepreneurial spirit out there. Will also comments on how the pandemic has affected companies very differently, with supply and demand rising or falling sharply over the last year and a half, depending on the industry and company. Will looks at inflation, the types of companies he stays away from, and shares his observations about his industry. Today's podcast was recorded on October 5th, 2021. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of Fidelity Investments Canada ULC or its affiliates. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice. It is not an offer to sell or buy, or an endorsement, recommendation, or sponsorship of any entity or security cited. Read a fund's prospectus before investing. Funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. Fees, expenses, and commissions are all associated with fund investments.
So, Will, I'm going to begin with a question that I think is on a lot of people's minds, a lot of investors' minds. Is, in fact, everything just too expensive right now? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, in the expensive group, Pamela, there's been a lot of fundraising in the last, year or so. The market is up a lot off the bottom. So those are, you know, two points to be concerned about. On the other hand, corporate earnings are also quite high. Corporations all over the world have done a great job managing through COVID, cutting costs, embracing technology, and meeting the demand that has rebounded sharply in the last 12 months or so. So, you know, a year ago, 2021 estimates might have been, you know, $167 for the S&P 500. They're now up to 200. So, you know, with the market, the S&P 500 is the market, quote unquote, market I watch most closely, is 4,300 or so. And, so with interest rates at 1.5% for the 10-year down here in the States, that is not, you know, a crazy, crazy multiple. And I would just point out that the large companies that you and I both know are generating a, you know, huge amount of free cash flow. You know, it's sort of like, do I want 1.5% in a U.S. 10-year, which isn't growing, you know, its yield, so to speak, or, you know, a 4% yield for Microsoft that's growing 10% a year and run, you know, by a very competent team. You know, so I can understand where the market is. The market is not cheap, but I wouldn't describe it as expensive. It has run. But, you know, I'll pause here. But, you know, yeah. The real question is, if rates back up, then, you know, your PE could come down. So, you know, relative to where rates are right now, the market feels fine to me. Rates could back up. And we have tougher COVID comparisons for a lot of companies. So, you know, you could see slowing growth and lower valuations. And that would be the, you know, sort of the bad case. That's a possibility that we're considering. But at this moment in time, companies are executing well, earnings are growing nicely, and rates are still low.
Right. And, you know, one of the things that I mean, I'm sort of curious, you have an incredible team who works with you. And of course, I sort of know that you love to pour through balance sheets yourself. You do a lot of digging. And I think even though you run this incredible fund, as we mentioned, one person running it, I know that sort of your first love is actually digging through balance sheets. Like, there's been a ton of IPOs. There's been a lot of new issuance going on. What have you been seeing? What have you been finding? What do you like about it?
Yeah, Pamela, that's a really good point. And I do make all the decisions for the Contra Fund and for, the Insights Fund in Canada and the other funds that I manage. But we have a great team at Fidelity. I'm trying to think of, next time I'll make sure to bring a picture so everyone can see the team. And, one real struggle in the last 18 months from work from home is not to be able to see the team. Zooming is fine, but it's so much easier when you can see them in person and high five a great stock pick or something. But we're getting back soon, and I've been in the office a fair bit already this fall, and it's been great. Literally in a 30-second conversation, you can bump into a junior colleague and say, "What do you like? What are you working on? What new names?" Speaking of new names, I bumped into the junior restaurant analyst who I didn't know very well. And he mentioned Toast was going public as well as Dutch Brothers. And I was able to zoom in on the IPO roadshows. So, the excitement of all the new issuance, and I think we're at like a $200 billion raised in the last year or so, which is sort of at a 20-year record, which again, in and of itself is a little concerning. On the other hand, there's just so much new merchandise that it's an opportunity to learn. It's an opportunity to meet new entrepreneurs. It's an opportunity to ask them, how are you running your company? Do you use, speaking of Microsoft, do you use Windows? Do you use Outlook? Or are you just going directly to the cloud and using Google Docs? And, are you using Adobe? Or are you using Figma and some of the other new software that's out there? So that's helpful. And then, of course, when you're listening to these new companies, you're thinking in the back of your mind, Pamela, well, which of my existing holdings should be doing that? Why aren't they embracing the cloud faster? Why weren't the auto companies embracing, EV technology earlier? So, you can sort of see innovation playing out and understanding an innovator's dilemma. A big company wants to do profitable things and not sacrifice their margins, and therefore creates opportunity for the new innovators. So it's super exciting. A firm has gone public and, they're doing this buy now, pay later. I don't know if you've tried that yet, but, the younger generation, according to a firm, wants nothing to do with credit cards and credit bureaus. And it's an intriguing idea. We're not going to charge any late fees. We're not even charging you interest. Square just bought Afterpay. So the category is growing and it's kind of intriguing. And Max Levchin's a great entrepreneur. And then it's sort of like, well, Max, what does this mean for the big banks? So again, there are a lot of, it's very provocative.
Let me drill down into, that type of conversation, but to an extent, you have a bit of a direct line to a number of the CEOs that you invest with. Can you share anything that you're allowed to share with us on just some of those phone calls, some of the conversations? Things have been changing. You're on the phone to them. What types of things do you like to glean and learn and maybe ask?
The tension is, if you speak with Matt Levchin, you might say, oh my gosh, every bank is not going to make any more money from their credit cards, and Visa, MasterCard are going to, turn into, dust and rubble. But the reality is, until that happens, it's sort of like the entire energy industry, Pamela. You listen to Elon Musk and it's sort of like, oh my God, no one's ever going to drive, a internal combustion engine car. But the reality is, I think the car park in the world is, a billion cars or something. And, there's still roughly 100 million cars being, made and sold throughout the world, and 98% of them are ICE cars. So things happen over time. It's sort of like, you know, IBM has been around for a long time, you know, despite so many other tech companies trying to, you know, knock them off the pedestal, you know, literally going back now 35 years. So, you know, big companies with, you know, strong competitive positions probably are going to be just fine, and they're generating a lot of free cash flow. The growth will slow. So it's the balance. And frankly, that's what, you know, I try to do with my portfolios. I try to make commitments to newer companies that are growing faster that might be more expensive, but then balance that with best of breed companies with strong moats and strong competitive positions, great business models.
I mean, just that whole idea of don't count out these massive earnings that large companies, as you say, are able to bring in. You also wonder just in, yeah, all we hear about is supply issues ultimately. It's just, there's certain industries where that's a huge issue and there's probably a bigger question mark around that.
Yeah.
And then there's other companies that just don't really have to deal with that in the same way.
Yeah. I mean, in hindsight, I think during COVID, demand fell sharply for many industries, and therefore the suppliers of those industries said, oh my gosh, we're going to cut back on CapEx. We're going to, you know, lay off people and just, you know, make sure that we survive this dramatic period. And then all of a sudden, you know, back in November time, the vaccine data was very positive. The government's all stimulated and demand has just rocketed up. And in certain cases, you know, in some of these semiconductor chips that are necessary for auto manufacturing, you know, they just don't have the supply now. So it's a classic case of, and, you know, similarly with, you know, oil and other commodities, you know, the spending for the industry went way down and all of a sudden demand has rebounded sharply. And, you know, a lot of people are caught short. You know, in tech and software, because, you know, you and I worked from home, we needed a new computer, we needed, you know, more software, more security, and the tech industry benefited. You know, clearly Amazon and Netflix benefited from stay at home. So it, you know, the pandemic affected different companies differently, but
I wonder if you can just sort of address the issue of, you know, bad news being priced in. I mean, if you think about even the energy sectors you just mentioned, I mean, there's a lot of bad news that was priced in. We saw, I mean, oil was an extraordinary case in the early days of the pandemic. And then obviously we see where we are today.
Periodically, it's a good point. You have these panics and, you know, and euphoric moments. And, you know, oil clearly was a buy right then and there. And, you know, I was just saying, gosh, capital intensive cyclical, I really don't want to go there. I have better opportunities. But, you know, God bless those who were able to step up. And, you know, my experience and my advice to you and the other listeners, Pamela, is to upgrade on weakness. What I like to do when things are out of favor, you know, and then, you know, ideally at Fidelity, we can actually call them and say, well, what do you think? You know, what are you doing? And, you know, but sometimes when executives own a lot of stock, they can get too, you know, conservative, and they become, you know, I want to protect what I have as opposed to, you know, continue to grow it and, you know, really take advantage of opportunities. But, you know, inflation is something to watch. You know, you just look at the numbers, Pamela, but like the last 20 years, from like, I think the late 90s through 2020, inflation was bouncing around, at least in the States, at 2%. And now in the last 12 months, all of a sudden it's doubled to 4%. And oh, by the way, the way that the rental factor is like 40% of the inflation. And it, I mean, it literally, I think government employees calling up once in a while. And if you look at the data, shorter term rents have exploded. So I think inflation is going to be more persistent. You know, talking to so many companies, they've had to raise minimum wages, which is good. You know, let's face it. You know, that's going to help demand. It's, you know, we want people working. We want people paid a fair wage. But right now, wages are going up pretty sharply. And that's the first time I've heard this, you know, And then, you know, anecdotally, you're talking to people, you know, the CFO of this particular local institution, how's it going? I mean, we can't find an HVAC person. You know, this HVAC person wants to, you know, an arm and a leg to come work for them. So it's just, you know, so my guess is that's going to lead to rates, you know, continuing to back up. So what are we going to do? There are certain sectors that benefit from higher rates. So financials, for example, are the banks in particular, assuming that a firm doesn't put them out of business, you've got loan growth that should improve, credit quality is improving. And then as rates back up a bit, assuming the yield curve deepens, you're going to have margins going up. And oh, by the way, the valuations are not that stretched. Every bank seems to peak out at 12 times earnings, where you've got, you know, the rest of the market we talked about over 20. So, you know, financials are not a bad, if you're worried about, you know, the market being too expensive, banks are not very expensive at all. You mentioned energy, you know, that's certainly a contrarian play. And what's fascinating, Pamela, is even though that oil has more than doubled off the bottom, you know, the big oil companies are saying we only want to invest in renewables because we want to be greener. And the independents are saying, well, gosh, we promised everybody we wouldn't increase spending. So we're not spent, you know, for the moment, we're not increasing our capital spending. But as soon as they all, you know, as soon as one starts increasing capital spending, others will follow. And that'll probably be the end of the trade. But I think we're okay.
It's an interesting, I mean, it's just a fascinating area, and it is part of the whole transition discussion. Tell us a little bit about your positioning, what you can share with us at this moment, where you've seen either to stay away from for a variety of reasons that you've mentioned, or to lean in towards.
For better or for worse, you got to look at what I am. And at this point, I have a heavy commitment to technology. And as we said, technology is a sector where the wind is at our back. The companies are growing very nicely. They are very, for the most part, very profitable and relatively capital light. You know, one could argue that the Facebooks and Googles of the world have to spend more on data centers, but for the most part, they're in the 40% operating margin, 20% free cash flow margin, which is just, you know, it's just staggering. And they're in massive markets. They continue to innovate. So, you know, I don't think that's a bad place to be. Short term, as I said, if rates back up, maybe valuations come in, there are tougher comparisons. He always comes back to the basics. You know, who wouldn't want great prices, great selection, and the convenience of having most of the stuff delivered next day? And, you know, that doesn't get old. That just keeps getting better. And, you know, guess what? The person in England wants that as much as the person in Canada or the person in the US or, by the way, the person in Mumbai.
It's hard to argue, as you say, with and, you know, we get distracted a lot. We get distracted a lot sometimes.
You know, I'm not sure if that's going to make people rich, but, you know, my view, and maybe I've gotten old and complacent, Pamela, but every year I put some money in Contra Fund or, you know, some of these other diversified funds at Fidelity, you know, in January. And I think that's the way to do it. And over time, you know, that will accumulate and we'll be able to, you know, hopefully retire comfortably. But, you know, if you want get rich quick, you know, I would talk to Mark Schmale or some of my other more aggressive colleagues. But, you know, what I'm trying to avoid is very expensive, unprofitable companies.
And there are some of those.
Yeah. Some of the newer names in the market are trading on, you know, some of the SPAC purchases. You know, basically the SPAC sponsors had to pay up to convince the private companies to go public. And so they might have, you know, given them, you know, let's not discount 2021 earnings and revenue. Let's go out to 2023. And oh, by the way, maybe the 23 numbers were, you know, EBITDA break even. And, you know, you got to go out to 25 until the company's really making decent money. So that's pretty far out there.
Yeah.
And so again, when things get frothy, you've got to be careful. And the real pricing is not on the IPO, but maybe it's the secondary or when after the distribution. My experience is, let's say 2 years after a company goes public, if they've been growing at, 35 or 40% a year, after 2 years, they're already twice as big and the stock might be up 20, 25% or even down. And you've then had 2 years of watching management execute. So maybe the team's a little stronger. You've got a sense for, the bigger opportunities, how maybe they've expanded their total addressable market. So there's a huge opportunity that's coming. If we can just be patient, a year or two out with all these IPOs that have happened in the last 18 months. But for the moment, I would say be careful with the hot IPO.
People invest with you for lifelong earnings, for protecting themselves. You're at home now, but I think you said when I spoke to you a couple of days ago that you went into the office.
What I've learned over time is that, when in doubt, call the company. And the only real advantage
that's hard for most of us.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
So you're relying on me to do my job. And, I'm calling as many companies as possible and trying not to panic and, trying to better understand the stories. And it's, on one hand, Zoom has been very productive because we haven't had to, we've had probably 2 extra hours of not having to commute, and the ability to go from Zoom to Zoom has been maybe easier than, having to schedule meetings in-house and everything. But I did go into the office, and, I see myself as a foundational fund for you and your colleagues. But if you want, as I said, to go further out on the growth spectrum, Shmael and Sonu, who runs Blue Chip Growth. I think Kyle Weaver has a product up there. Those guys are younger. They're able to embrace new technologies, I think, a little easier. I would just say, so I do talk to a lot of executives, and it's just remarkable, Pamela, how much entrepreneurial spirit and energy there is. This idea of, I saw a problem or I saw an opportunity and I said, I want to fix it. I mean, let's all embrace our Elon Musk, our inner Elon Musk. He sees problems and says, I can try to solve this. And it's just remarkable and it's inspiring. So we just have to keep doing that. And, in some cases, it can be very profitable. I mentioned some of the IPOs, but there are also a lot of private companies that the team and I have been able to meet and in some cases invest with through our, relationship with Tesla. We also invested in SpaceX, and, space is hot right now. That SpaceX really is putting up the Starlink. Speaking of rural Canada and rural America, they're going to be offering better internet access via a network of low Earth orbiting small satellites. So that's going to be exciting. I also invested in a company called Relativity Space, which is going to be 3D printing rockets. And, we'll see. But
would you go to space if you got the opportunity?
I'll let you go first, Pamela.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. I feel that way generally myself.
Yeah. Listen, never say never. This is what, you mentioned what I miss about not going into the office. I miss particularly my younger colleagues, Pamela, because young people are more open to new adventures. And, I'm not sure when I'll go to space, but my guess is if my kids say we should go, Dad, I'll be going with them.
What do you see in your industry? There are new people coming into the industry. What are your observations generally?
New people are super enthusiastic and they're super open to new ideas. And then, the embracing of technology is critical. And, what are we seeing? We're seeing so many companies pivoting towards subscription models, whether it's software as a service or you know, streaming and music services. And you just, you know, again, who would have thought, or, you know, even Uber, I mean, and Airbnb, which has gone public. Everybody should look at, YouTube, Brian Chesky. I mean, you've got the ability to YouTube all of these great executives that I've had the pleasure and honor of meeting. These are really, really super smart, super hardworking, visionary executives who are giving it their all. But when I first heard Chesky, you know, my lovely wife elbowed me and said, there's no way I'm going to stay in somebody else's apartment. And, you know, ditto with Travis at Uber. Am I going to get into somebody else's car that I don't know? But the reality is, with the internet and smartphones and the rating systems, you're not really getting into a stranger's car. You're getting into a rated stranger's car. And, you know, if they're rated 5.0, it's okay. So, you know, that's where the young people, when I remember talking to one of my younger colleagues about Airbnb, and they said, we like to go where other young people are, so we stay at their place and we can meet them and they can give us advice on where to hang out. And maybe, you know, I believe when Chesky did the very first Airbnbs, he would like take the guests around and they became friendly, you know, and like went to parties together and stuff. So, you know, it's a new world out there.
It's a lifestyle, and it's something that mm-hmm. you get the opportunity to tap into with the CEOs. Yeah. It is such a pleasure to speak with you, and I hope that you'll come back and join us soon on Fidelity Connects. Thank you, Will Dana.
Pamela, it's always a pleasure. We're working hard. We're trying to find great opportunities, but stocks follow earnings. So we want companies that are going to grow their earnings in the next 5 years.
Thanks for listening to the Fidelity Connects podcast. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to Fidelity Connects on your podcast platform of choice. And if you like what you're hearing, leave a review or a 5-star rating. You can visit fidelity.ca for more information on future live webcasts. And don't forget to follow Fidelity Canada on Twitter. Thanks again. See you next time.